Hello, and welcome to the Cup of Tea podcast. I'm Mike Ewan.
And I'm Catherine Lilly.
And we both work in the Teaching Excellence Academy at the University of Hull, where our roles are to develop, celebrate and promote HE level teaching. This podcast is designed to explore and share some of the fantastic teaching practices here at the university by showcasing work of some of our colleagues, what they do, how and why they do it, and what the impact has been.
This week, we'll be speaking to Andrea Hilton, a lecturer from Advanced Practice here at Faculty of Health, who's going to be sharing with us her approaches to flipped and blended learning.
So without further ado, pour yourself a cup of tea and enjoy the show. So, hello. Hi, thanks for coming, Andrea. Welcome to a Cup of Tea podcast on this very wet and windy day. And thanks for coming to join us today. So we're going to ask you to introduce yourself shortly, but before we do that, we always ask the same question, and that is, what is your go-to drink, maybe to start the day or maybe to finish the day? I don't know, but what is, you know, have you got a go-to?
In the morning, yeah. It is always a cup of tea. Throughout the day, it's coffee.
Yeah.
And my treat in the day is a decaf skinny cappuccino.
That doesn't sound like a treat, though.
It's a bit of fun. And if I'm splashing out, I might have a sugar-free syrup.
Oof. I didn't know they did those. Well, that's a game changer.
Sugar-free syrups.
Yeah, sugar-free syrup. Okay. Oh, thank you very much. I like the menu idea. Yeah, so today we've come along to, I think, talk about your approach to teaching, especially in kind of the realms of blended and kind of flipped teaching. But first, would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about where your background and where you're from.
I'm Andrea Hilton. I've been at the university since 2006. And I've morphed from, I think it was 1.5 days originally, to eventually full time, but only full time, and the memory is a blur often, years roll into one. So I think since about 2016, I've been full time. Yeah. I've always been associated with a program, although it's really a short course, but it operates a lot like a program known as non-medical prescribing. So, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, and that's what we're going to talk about in this podcast. I'm a pharmacist by background, so I teach predominantly pharmacology, which is how medicines work in the body, and also I do general sort of applied teaching around prescribing of medicines.
Yeah, sounds good. I did my work experience at school in a pharmacy.
Did you?
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah.
Pharmacy absolutely incredible. Is fantastic. Obviously, yeah. I would say that I'm a pharmacist and I'm very passionate about healthcare in general. And that's why I came onto the course, which is called non-medical prescribing. I have recently, last year, which will be 2023, moved away from being the programme director. But for several years, I was the programme director for non-medical prescribing. And essentially what that is it's a postgraduate course, which is to give a registered qualification to enable qualified health professionals to undertake an additional training to enable them to prescribe medicines. And people who, healthcare professionals who are registered, experienced and already qualified, come on the course, and that can be from nurses, midwife, pharmacists, physios, podiatrists, advanced paramedics, to do this additional qualification to enable them to prescribe. And they're the health professionals we take at Hull currently. Right. There are other ones that can prescribe.
Oh, so they're doing this course alongside working?
Absolutely. They usually have a clinical commitment, which is often full-time, but not always, but often is. Given the fact that this course is very much a more advanced course, they're usually senior practitioners. So they're obviously balancing probably their own clinical senior commitments with coming back to university to do what is an intense course. There's a theoretical element and a practical element, which is done in an authentic environment in their clinical workplace.
Okay.
And obviously they're managing, as all of us are, that balance of the work-life balance and family.
So does that inform how you approach delivery of this course?
We're governed a lot by PSRB, so professionally and statutory regulatory bodies, who regulate and accredit the courses, and they'll often have a curriculum and a delivery model or suggestions, and we have to be validated against that. So the current method of delivery is predominantly taught face-to-face because some of the content is quite new to a lot of people, not everybody, but we find that actually having that interactivity within the class environment, not didactic teaching, but that interaction does, we think, facilitate a deeper rather than surface understanding. Yeah. Although the way I currently set up my sessions does facilitate in the future moving to a much more blended approach, potentially, obviously, as there might be pressures that people can't attend in a timetable session, or indeed can't actually attend in inverted commas because it's a podcast synchronously. So we might go to a more asynchronous delivery. Right. So I have tried to future-proof some of the sessions that I am delivering currently to perhaps take it to a more blended approach. And obviously during the 2020 issues, we did deliver online. Synchronously on using the predominantly obviously Microsoft Teams online face-to-face teaching. Okay. But obviously that then does pose barriers because of, I've made an assumption here, but generally because they're senior healthcare practitioners don't have digital literacy issues as such or digital poverty. But that is something that one needs to obviously be thinking about.
So do you think that period kind of shifted you to think about delivering in a blended way, or was it always the plan, do you think?
I think the plan to deliver blended has always been running through, certainly when I was programme director, running through my mind. But it's balancing feedback for everybody. Some people and some students completely, their style of learning as an adult learner is geared up to blended or indeed completely online or distance learning. Other people still want to come into a classroom environment and that community, particularly in inverted commas again, classroom environment, obviously lecture environment.
Yeah.
So I think obviously, again, looking at the needs of students, it's about one size isn't going to fit all and recognising that. For me, as my personal style of learning, I used to quite like distance learning because I could do it in my own time. Now, for me, in my life course where I am now, I think I would actually prefer ring-fence time to actually go to somewhere because it's almost like protected time.
Yeah.
So I think there's lots to think about. And I guess for me, in my academic experience, is one size doesn't fit all, but sometimes we have to make the balance.
And I guess it's sort of drawing the positive features from each type. So, you know, the value of a group of very disparate healthcare professionals coming together physically and the interactions that they might have might be very different to online. So I'm guessing that will inform the types of activities and approaches that you use in each environment.
Absolutely. And I think what, you know, very anecdotally, probably a research gap, unless it's been done already and I'm not aware of it, is that dynamic is different, that community of practice, potentially when you see somebody face to face. And the other thing, people develop that sense of belonging and community, which you may not get potentially so much, I guess, distance learning, although it's not my research field. So I'm sure there's other colleagues in the university who might want to comment on that and open up that discussion. And that, again, that community of discussion about developing communities of practice. And I'll be interested to know what colleagues across the university feel about that. But I also think when the value of, particularly because I'm doing small group teaching and I appreciate lots of people, and I was listening to Neil's podcast where he's delivering to 200-300 people, the audience, the students that I deliver to, were probably upwards of 30, probably no more than 60. So when I'm delivering quite complicated material, I am acutely aware of people's non-verbals.
Yes,
which in my opinion isn't always feasible on Teams. A, because you've got any other platform you might use.
Yeah, we're not sponsoring it.
But the little profile pictures. And then you've still got people who, for whatever reason, choose to turn off their cameras.
Yeah.
So you can't pick up subtle non-verbal of, you know, total glazed over, switched off. And then at that point, when I'm delivering in a class, as many of our academic colleagues will do, you'll look at somebody and you'll say, right, shall we have a pause now?
Yes.
Let's recap, refresh. And that's where I think using something like Mentimeter can really come in to do some quick snapshots of quick surface knowledge.
Yes.
Or understanding.
And that approach, so as you move into kind of the more blended, well, is it, do you think more, using terminology maybe for the sake of it, but the flip model where you're still delivering on campus, but maybe providing some of the resources and materials? And
you're absolutely right, Mike. So what I've done, again, within the team, so for the purpose of the fact that this is audio, yeah. I've got my Canvas site up so I can talk about it. So what I joint teach what the pharmacology sessions, so how medicines work in the body, and we particularly look at how you absorb medicines, how you distribute them, i.e. get them around the body, how you might metabolize them, i.e. change them, and how you might excrete them. So we do more than that, but that's the big chunk. It's called ADME. But I won't get too deep for people because I've probably switched people off already. But some generic principles of what I've done. So I've set up my section of the Canvas site. So it's very directed and also facilitates the use of badges later on. So I guess many people will be familiar this, where you ultimately complete a section, you get a badge,
right. But
you have to do this, there's prerequisites.
Right.
So the first thing I've done is, before this session, complete option one or option two. So that's some pre-course self-directed reading. Of course, as adult learners, people can choose to do that or not. But option one is generally a more advanced, perhaps in not to use level three terminology, but a little bit more stretch and challenge.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas option two would be the minimum of what we would expect.
Right.
And I've utilised the e-books that we've got at the library, so access isn't a problem.
Yeah.
And then we go on to anybody who's got comments from that. I've set up a discussion forum, which is called Pre-Reading Comments and Questions. So before we go into a face-to-face situation, I can gauge engagement and then answer any questions on the discussion forum. So this is usually set up a week in advance. Then we have my session, a presentation, and my colleague's Laura's session. So Laura teaches the sciencey type background. So when we're talking about how a body system, it's the science, and then I'll do the applied pharmaceutical drug example. So that really is the power of that joint teaching, because we're bringing we converge, but we're bringing very separate experiences. After the session, we have a post discussion. So the students have then left the formal teaching, if you like. They're into reading on their own or reviewing the material. So then I use a discussion forum, which is a separate one. And then what the team have introduced this year, and used much more, is utilising formative quizzes. So after each session, there's then a formative quiz. We're not obviously marking it. And it's a mixture of MCQs, which obviously we do mark, because you can auto-mark them in Canvas, and then shorter type exam style questions with an indicative mark profile. And then what I've also done with those, and myself and Laura have done, is give a skeleton structure to the answer, not a full answer, because again, this is much more applied. We don't want a standard rote answer. What we'd like is that understanding. So that's why we've given a skeleton outline of what we'd expect in the answer. And the other thing is, I've thrown some questions in there, such as, have you gone and downloaded this NHS app? Yes or no? Have you thought about taking it a step further with doing this material that's available?
So you're building stretch into the...
And then the other thing that I've done is take it further again. So we've done some additional reading if somebody's got a real interest in that particular subject. The core material is what we're delivering in the lecture.
Yeah.
but then there is some more additional reading. And like I said at the beginning, there's a very much practical base competencies,
right.
You know, you to be competent to prescribe. So what I've done then is said, take it further, use your time in practice, because what you might prescribe when you're qualified, take the information we've done from the session and now apply it to things that are much more familiar to you and your clinical area.
Yeah.
So we are getting that joined up, cohesive educational underpinning.
Mm-hmm.
So we are taking that what can be perceived quite theoretical and actually applying it to get that much more deeper understanding rather than just a surface approach to learning.
Yeah. And do you get kind of good engagement with the discussion forums? Do students kind of proactively contribute to that, or do you have to give them a bit of a nudge? Or
Nope, students are proactively engaging in it. Mm-hmm. Obviously not everybody, because then that's individual learning styles. Mm-hmm. But I am finding I'm having to, in a really positive and good way, I have said I will go in on a Monday and I'll go in on a Thursday, definitively, because teaching's on a Wednesday,
right.
And then ad hoc. So it is manageable both from an academic point of view and a student point of view.
Mm.
And obviously I think that's important as well for our students. And again, people will have their own experiences, that setting those expectations from my experience is really important, that you're not going to, you can't possibly engage with the discussion forums every single day.
Yeah.
So I have set the expectation that, and this practical tip that I find really useful is it's in my diary as a recurring meeting on a Monday, well, not a meeting, but a recurring appointment on a Monday and a Thursday to check the Canvas site.
Yeah. And then I think if they see that you're in those spaces as well, they're more likely to come back. Do you see and much interaction between the students? So like if someone asks a question, would another student jump in and answer?
Yep, absolutely.
That links back to that kind of community. It's a different type of community, isn't it? But it's still a community.
Mike, you're absolutely right. We are trying to develop that community. So I have set up a discussion forum called Community of Practice Pharmacology Sharing Resources. So what I put here is, please use this space to upload any resources you have found useful. However, what I have put on that is that myself and Laura will not quality assure those. Mm. While there is a huge plethora of resources out there, and students do share them, I do want it to be clear that there might be some misinformation in some of those, so it isn't possible to quality assure all of them. And it goes back to, again, the material we've given is the material we've given.
Yeah.
But we appreciate, obviously, that there's many different styles of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people might want videos for their style of learning. Other people prefer that face-to-face conversation. Other people just want to go away and read themselves.
Mm.
And I think that's the beauty of academia, but equally the challenge for me.
Yeah. I think it's important that making that clear to them as well, I suppose, because again, you're reinforcing things like the information literacy and promoting them to look at each item which is being shared and interpret it in their own way and, you know, assess its quality and its.
Yeah. And indeed, that's one of the competencies for non-medical prescribing students is about evidence-based practice.
Yeah.
So quality appraisal, and obviously that's to be applied for any student, critiquing, bias, sources of information. We can delete this section if you want, Mike. Obviously thinking about in the future AI and how students are able to quality appraise information that they're reading from an AI point of view.
Have you seen that start to come into the course, or people talk, students talking about it?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we have that with undergraduates with academic integrity, but for the students that I'm involved in teaching, like I say, because they are professionally regulated, there's that integrity, honesty, probability implicitly running through.
Yeah. But I mean, it strikes me, even though it's quite a highly regulated course in terms of the curriculum and things, you've made it really accessible and really kind of that students can tailor it to their own needs and make it authentic to their practice in their setting. So it's, you know, you've taken something that could be quite restrictive but allowed students to approach it in their own way.
Hopefully. I mean, that was, if we're starting with the mission statement, then yes, that's hopefully what my colleague Laura and I, particularly for these sections, have done, because it's not about making people pharmacologists or scientists of the pharmacy or the how medicines actually work, although part of it is, it's about making safe and effective non-medical prescribers. Mm. And you must have that information for your clinical decision making, but there's obviously so much more you can deliver. You know, pharmacology is a degree in itself. Mm. So it is that balance.
Yeah.
And there will always be some students who absolutely love this material and others who find it a little bit more challenging. Hence the fact we tried to take it further, but we've been very clear with this that you don't have to.
Yeah. It's just there if they,
if you've got a real
burning passion.
Indeed.
Yeah. And I think probably can tell, but do you see this working in a number of different settings across the university, this approach?
I don't see why not. Mm. And again, it's not one size fits all.
Yeah.
But it's a taking, it's almost like you want to cherry pick techniques.
Yeah.
And then think, yeah, that'll work, that won't work. And I think the beauty of that is we're developing that community here with podcasts.
Mm.
We, IETA, are developing that community with podcasts, sharing good practice. And it's not going to be I'll lift this model from X.
Yeah.
It'll be I'll take a little bit of A's, I'll take a little bit of B's, I'll take a little bit of C's.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we've done as well, just to help students, is Laura and I have narrated a condensed version of the presentation, which goes on as, you could call it revision if you like.
Yeah.
But again, it's just to try and help people with a different style of learning. Yeah. If they don't like visual material, they've now got a recorded version. It is very much a streamlined one, or you could use it as revision.
Yeah.
And then build up your revision knowledge from it.
You mentioned earlier as well about the fact that in the future, people's attendance models might change. Have you tried, or have you thought about trying like hybrid, you know, where you're teaching in class and online at the same time?
For me, not yet.
Yeah.
And the sessions I've done, it would be something to try, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a different skill set.
I think, yeah.
Certainly, you know, if I apply outside of scholarship academia to more general meetings, we all know that having meetings where you've got hybrid and in-person meetings presents their unique set of challenges.
Yes, that's a nice way.
I think we've also got to be mindful of the student experience and that equity across the experience.
Yeah.
So people who are engaging online have a still enriched quality experience and educational experience as those that are attending in person.
Yeah.
And perhaps it's more of an academic community to develop that skill.
Mm, definitely. Yeah, and I think it's one which you need, for it to work well, you need everything to be right. So you need the room set up to be right. You need the cameras and everything to just work from the moment you walk in. And I think there's pockets across the whole sector who are probably doing it well, but I think there's still a number of challenges facing that. So,
I also think, just very much thinking, like, just very quickly, it probably needs at least two people in the room.
100%, yeah.
So you can, so if you want that interactivity and that engagement, and again, the students that I am involved in, we want that interactivity, we want that discussion, we want that sharing, and therefore, if somebody is accessing remotely, it's how you make sure that they're engaged in posting on a discussion forum.
Yes, yeah.
And you do need somebody to moderate that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you do need more than two people, well, more than one, ideally, obviously two or more, to pick up everything so everybody feels they have a voice, particularly in the discussion forums.
Are there any kind of key tips you would give to others who might be thinking about moving to more of a blended or flipped approach?
Try it.
Yeah.
Refine it.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the time.
Okay. Yeah.
It involves. And I think that's the key. I've only been able to do this more recently because I've had a little bit more time for my scholarship and teaching time.
Yeah.
So is it setup time or is it managing it or is it both?
I think it's both.
Both. Yeah.
I think it is both. Mm. And obviously when you're doing things like if you're doing, and I've only touched the tip of the iceberg on this, many people would be much more know the technology much better than I do. But for instance, using Mentimeter, just being mindful that people can't access it as quick as you think.
Yes.
So one of the things that I've done this year, which didn't even occur to me, was I did a timing of, say, 2 minutes on a Mentimeter question to manage the flow of material. Mm. But actually feedback was like, we can't do it in 2 minutes. It puts us under too much pressure. Okay. So one of the things that I've done, which I didn't even think about, so what I've done this time is said appoint a mentee scribe, if we're on tables, do a little bit of group work. So I've been able to do it in 5 or 10 minutes. So we've got that group discussion, but we've just got one person doing the scribing into Mentee.
So you still capture it.
So I'm still capturing it. I can still triangulate it back.
That's really nice.
So I can still look and talk to the group, but without putting people, if they don't feel under pressure with the time pressure, to still engage in the discussion.
Yeah.
And that's something I'll, you know, in all my years of experience so far, that not occurred to me, that actually doing a time-limited mentee quiz, for instance, puts some students under pressure that they don't feel like they want to participate.
It's a lovely moment, though, isn't it, when you're spotting, I could change this, and then you try it, as you say, you try it, you change it.
Yeah. And it's about being open to change and developing one's own competence.
Yeah. We're quite excited, and, well, maybe I am, in the academy, because we've just a new role within the Academy of Instructional Design, and the whole point of that role is to support academics in creating content for kind of the online, the blended elements, to try and take some of that time pressure off people. So this is a bit like an advert, I suppose, but we'd be really interested to see how that works and whether that kind of extra bit of support will be useful to people and move more towards the blended approach. Well, thank you very much. That was brilliant. Really interesting. We normally would say, can we share any resources? But it's a bit tricky with a Canvas page, really.
I'm more than happy to use TEA's Canvas site and maybe do that discussion forum and set up our own community for people
to
chip in and share ideas.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for coming along and sharing your experiences with us today.
I'm going to go have my decaf skinny cappuccino.
Oh, right.
Possibly with a syrup.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.